welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I am Lee Cantor, and I am joined in the studio with Mr. Stone Payton. How you doing, Stone?
Good afternoon, sir. I'm doing well. I'm well-fed and well-rested. Excited about this show we're going to have this afternoon. Incidentally, I think I mentioned to you at lunch, I just wrote a check to Kennesaw State University, but quite happily. It's a very cost-effective way to get your child educated, and she's home for the summer. She's taking a class out there, and it's another excuse to go visit that fine facility where we had that meal, remember?
That's right, and your child has spent some time there, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, and she loves Kennesaw. She actually went, and we're going to visit with one of our guests who's been in the studio before, Alvin Miles, in a little bit. He may remember me mentioning my Katie. She did the dual enrollment thing where she actually went to college her senior year of high school. She loves Kennesaw, and we love Kennesaw now. I've got an excuse to go out there and take advantage of that place. That was the Commons, I think they called it.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Man, that place was fantastic. So we do have a fantastic show lined up for you. A little bit later in the program, we are going to hear from Sue Rieger, who is with International Services. And we'll have to ask her when she comes on. I think maybe we first met her at one of these remote broadcasts. Maybe at Startup Lounge. Is that? I'm getting the big nod. So
there you go.
So it'd be fun.
It's all coming together now.
It is. It's all coming into focus. And as I mentioned, a little bit later in the program, we're going to hear from Alvin Miles with the executive MBA program out at Kennesaw. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this afternoon, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the grand poobah of the ICA Institute, which, of course, is affiliated and part of Kennesaw, I believe, Dr. Govind Hurihan. How close was that, doctor?
Not even close.
little past. Little past. Govind Hurihan. But only I can say it.
So give us a little bit of an overview, if you would, about ICA Institute. What are you guys out there doing for folks?
Well, first of all, the ICA Institute which stands for India-China-America Institute, was founded by Dr. Jagdish Sheth at Emory University. And the primary mission of the Institute is to bring together governments, academics, and industry to look for creative thought leadership on how best to make these three countries work well together and what that implies for the rest of the world. So how can you do business? How can you set up the appropriate policies in a world in which these are the three dominant economies?
But now, what is your role in the Institute?
So the Institute, which is a 501c3 not-for-profit, is now it's called a cooperating entity with Kennesaw State University. So we are not a part of Kennesaw State, but we work closely with Kennesaw State, and Kennesaw State provides my time, etc., in this initiative, which fits very well within what Kennesaw State and its QEP, or the Quality Enhancement Plan of going global, has a very, very international focus. And so this is a primary component of that.
So how are India, China, and America, are we playing pretty well together now? Are we playing better together than we did 5 or 10 years ago, or not so much?
Well, it's become more and more, if I may tell you, there's a back in time, about a year and a half ago,
right,
President Obama went to visit India. And as soon as the meetings were over, he announced that we have $9 billion worth of contracts, mostly in the defense and aerospace industry. A month later, the Chinese premier was there, and he announced $32 billion. So there is this constant, in some areas we collaborate, in some areas we compete. There's this formation of coalitions that keeps happening between these three countries. In some things, India is closer partners with China. In some others, they're closer partners with the U.S., So, for instance, in the lot of our policy, last year, Secretary of State Clinton was over in India among many of her visits, and I was at a reception with her, and the primary emphasis of that entire visit was to get India to look more westward, as in look towards the rest of Asia, as opposed to focusing too much on the Middle East and Afghanistan, etc. And so the U.S. tries to work with India in a lot of business and educational enterprises. China has become India's largest trading partner.
Right.
And so there's all these dynamics that happens, and the purpose of the Institute is to get a better understanding of that and formulate policies that bring about collaborative solutions.
Does the United States trade more with China or India?
With China, by far.
By far?
Oh, yeah.
Now, why do you think that is? I mean, I would think that it's in our best interest to align closer with India since they're a democracy.
Yes, but on the other hand, I think China is a lot farther along in terms of liberalization in trade as opposed to India. India really started going only about 91 or so when they had the liberalization package. And so it's more of a last two-decade phenomena as opposed to the four or five decades of China. And China has, just like India, a very large population, but it's all focused from the central government down in terms of making sure that China is highly competitive. India, on the other hand, is a very large democracy.
So it's messier.
It's a lot messier. Absolutely, absolutely. But it's also a lot more sustainable because of that.
Right.
So there are pros and cons.
Now, is this primarily a big business conversation, or is it a small business conversation? Do businesses the size of Business Radio X need to be engaged in these discussions?
Absolutely. Absolutely. See, the difference, I think, in the purpose, in the context of our institute, for instance, a lot of the large companies are already in these countries. In China, they're all well-established. They have tremendous expertise, etc. In India, they're starting to over the last 5-6 years in particular. But for small businesses and medium-sized enterprises which are interested in doing business with India and doing business with China, there is not as much of expertise available. And so we can provide the same type of thought leadership to all of them.
And so what does India government and India business want from Americans? They want us to understand them better? Do they want investment? Do they want us, for instance, would they prefer that Business Radio X buy our microphones from India, or would they rather us put studios in India, or do they just want us to take the money we're making in America and invest it in something else in India, or all of that?
All of the above. All of the above. I mean, it's because the partnership between India and U.S. has typically for a long, long time now, has had an element of foreign direct investment from the U.S., has had an element of U.S. aid. Now some of that aid component has totally gone away because India and China, they all contribute to the IMF, to the World Bank, etc., have started investing abroad. So now you have a two-way flow. There are companies from India that invest here, like, for instance, Novelis, Columbia Chemical Company in Marietta.
Mm-hmm.
They're all owned by they were acquired by an Indian company, which is a really very big group called the Aditya Birla Group. Very solid company, tremendous values and so on, that fits very well within and have been very successful in this market.
Are Indian and Chinese companies looking to acquire or at least partially acquire some companies here in America in order to get a footprint here?
Oh, most definitely. There's been a lot of that happening, especially in the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have Chinese companies for sure. You have Indian companies. Most recently, I think we just received approval for a Chinese bank to acquire a U.S. bank.
Right.
And for a long time, that had been a big issue. You don't typically have the same type of objections in the U.S. with regard to Indian companies as you do with Chinese companies. And that's one of the things that...
But if somebody has a startup, we're pretty involved in the startup community. If somebody has a startup, is going to India or China a place to look for investors?
If it is a startup, they usually have a part of some community locally, like, for instance, there's organizations like Thai Atlanta, of which I'm a charter member, which does a lot of work with entrepreneurs and startups from every country that is located here. And so you come into contact with a lot of Indian venture capitalists, you come into contact with a lot of funding sources from India, as well as the U.S. and China.
So what's the initial perception in Asia of Americans? Is there any of that ugly American flavor kind of vibe going on? Are they, Stone Payton from America has got a call or a note in, are they kind of excited, hey, we want to talk to this guy?
Well, I wouldn't, you know, one of the problems is that there's, first of all, it changes over time. And second, every region in every group within Asia is often different in terms
of how they perceive. It's not a one-size-fits-all
thing. No, it isn't. It isn't at all. So, for instance, in over the, back when we had 9/11, then that was a big point of emphasis, and it was very difficult for people from other countries to get visa to travel in the U.S., to study in the U.S., etc. And so that was a big major point of attention in Asia. Since then, it's become a lot more about business and trade. Everybody wants to grow, especially in an uncertain economy, global economy as we have right now. And this is the region that is booming. Because of the fact that the U.S. and the rest of the Western world has been really in the doldrums, mired in an eddy, so to say, in the context of their economic performance and the future, immediate future outlook for them. So there's a lot more of collaboration and trade negotiations that happen within Asia as opposed to between Asia and the rest of the world.
Uh-huh.
And so that is where a lot of things are happening now. So, for instance, in the context of India, China, America, the question that immediately pops up every time I do a presentation in Asia is, why isn't it India, China, ASEAN?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And we say, well, they're all part of this. But these are the three largest economies that are evolving to be the three largest economies. These are the three markets with the biggest spending power, with the largest middle class, and therefore everybody has to pay attention to these three.
So I want to hear more about the activities of ICA Institute. You just mentioned one. You're over there on that side of the pond making presentations. Who are you talking to? What are you trying? What are you telling them? And how do you know when it's been a successful trip?
Well, we know it's a successful trip first and foremost when we have a whole bunch of people who are very excited and keep bombarding me with emails and phone calls afterwards. You know it's a success. There's a couple of things we do. And one of them, for instance, because this is a thought leadership institute, we have three components. One is the development of the thought leadership itself, to which we bring together government leaders, industry leaders, as well as academics, to really create a model for how do you do business in these countries, how do you set up the right framework, the right policies to be successful in these countries. We also train each of these components, train each of these groups. So, for instance, we had the first group of Indian Revenue Service Administrative Officers. This is the top echelon of the IRS in the U.S., for instance. Mm-hmm. So 140 of them were here in Atlanta last November. There'll be another batch that will be coming in February or March. And so while they are here, they get trained on, because U.S. and India have such strong relationships now in terms of business, because there's such a flow of people back and forth and assets back and forth, Revenue Service needs to be aware of how the U.S. views the same treaty, how does it implement the same treaties in order to get a good grasp of what they need to do. So we provide training for governments. We have partnerships. We send students from here. For example, there is two of our students at Kennesaw that we selected from a pretty big competition are being sent at our expense to China to attend the China CEO Forum, the APEC.
Oh, that's
China
fantastic.
Yeah,
that's
cool.
Great.
Thanks. And the students are excited, actually. They're just on their way right now. And so they'll meet everybody from Yang Ming, the former NBA star, along with a lot of business leaders. So we do things for students. We take students to India. We had a big competition in India last December that we took students to. We also have very strong partnerships with institutes, a very strong institute called the South Institute for South Asian Studies and the East Asian Institute at the National University of Singapore. We are in discussions with the Aspen Institute in India to put together joint programs. We also participate in a lot of business events there. So we have a mailing list of about 9,000 people from around the world. Many of them are in business, some from academics, and some from government.
So thought leadership, training, collaboration, participation. So organizations, for example, right here in Atlanta, Georgia, mm-hmm. what are some ways, if any, that they can get involved and participate, learn more, are there things that are open to us or that we can pay a modest fee and be a part of this thing?
Absolutely. So far, we've been very good at keeping everything that we do open. And let me just bring up one event that we have, which is going to be a huge launch. We're launching this program called Industry Government Academic Partnership Program, right? So in that program, we meet with industry leaders. We meet with government leaders in all three of these countries to find out one issue that is of great importance to them. Then bring these three groups together to figure out a way to solve this problem. So the one that we are kicking off the initiative with is on the 20th of June. We'll host it at Kennesaw. We have until recently, the Joint Secretary of Finance, who was responsible for all of the initiatives pertaining to banking. He was a top government official. So he's being paired with the Managing Director of Emerging Markets for Equifax, for whom the unbanked, people who are not really part of the financial system in emerging markets, is a major obstacle because they don't have data on them.
The unbanked. Have you come across that term before?
No.
The unbanked.
And it turned out that in the recent IMF World Bank annual meetings in spring, this was the highlight of their discussion as well, that 75% of the world's poor are in the unbanked sector, and transforming them into an area in which they have access to much better financial resources is absolute key. So we have an event on the 20th evening, and anybody who wants more information can come to our website, www.icainstitute.org, and get on our mailing list, and we'll send you, we have sector briefs twice every month, one on India, one on China, that looks at different industries, looks at the latest data on those industries, creates a snapshot. So there's a lot of things that we do, and the public is welcome to sign up and participate in them. And we look forward to their comments as well.
This is going to be incredibly rewarding work. You must really feel good at the end of every day. You're having a real impact. I know you got a lot of moving parts. You're hurting a lot of cats, but you're getting some real important work done.
I'm having a lot of fun. That's how I lost all my hair.
But see, I wasn't going to tell on you. We're on radio, and I wasn't going to tell on you. There you went and confessed for yourself. Before we let you go, let's make sure once again, because you'll do a better job of pronouncing it than I will, that our listeners have your name. Name of the institute, website, and talk again about this upcoming event.
Okay. My name is Govind Hariharan. I'm the executive director of the India-China-America Institute. The website is www.icainstitute.org. And you can email us, you can call us, you can come and subscribe to all our events. We have an event that's coming up on the 20th, which has three key people from industry, from government, and from academics to bring together some collaborative solutions that we'll then submit to the respective governments as well as organizations like Equifax. This will be on financial inclusion.
What a delight to have you in the studio. Thank you, sir. And we got to have you back. And I got to believe, maybe with a little more runway, when we know we have folks like that coming in, we'll get them in the studio and we'll talk to them and get the story behind them. Fantastic. How about hanging out with us for a little bit while we visit with our next guest?
I'd love to. I know both of these people quite well, and what they do is very exciting.
I thought it was kind of a cozy group out in the lobby. Didn't it strike you as a
fast friends?
Right. Well, we do have next up on Atlanta Business Radio this afternoon a return guest, Lee, no stranger to the Business Radio X, Mike. He is with the Executive MBA program out at Kennesaw State University, Mr. Alvin Miles. Welcome back to the program, man.
Well, thank you, Stone, and also good to see you, Lee.
Thanks.
So what have you been up to since we talked to you last? I think as we opened the show that just wrote a check to KSU. It was a very modest check for the return we get, candidly. And so I know there's some summer school stuff going on out there, but what's going on with you?
Yeah, you're right. On the undergrad side, there's summer school happening. And on the graduate side for the executive MBA, we're in the third semester of five for the class of 2013. And so we've got those 41 folks that are moving their way through this five-semester program, and they're having a grand time. Actually, the next class is this coming weekend.
So Lee, maybe you should attend. Are you master's material?
No, I don't think I don't think I'd be accepted. You have to have a certain score in something, right?
Yeah,
you don't
yeah.
just take anybody.
No, not just anybody.
You got to get 4 out of 5 foul shots. No, that's not how it works.
Well, actually, we want 5 out of 5. This is a master's degree, right?
So I know we've had this conversation before, but I want to dive in a little bit deeper. Day to day, what are you and your team doing out there at the Executive MBA program? Are you out there just trying to recruit the best of the best? Are you putting your heads together and thinking through developing and enhancing the curriculum, or a little bit of all of that?
Well, overall, I think you nailed pretty much what we're trying to do at the Executive MBA program and total. We've split the program up into two sides. Dr. Allison Keefe handles the faculty and curriculum side, so her responsibilities include everything that's delivered in the classroom.
She's the reason Lee can't get in.
Yeah, she's pretty tough, I'll tell you. Her standards are very high. It's a wonder I got in. And on my side, I'm the Director of Business Development, Admissions, and Recruiting. And so I'm focused on the B2B efforts of getting the right people in the program. We're also focused on getting to companies that have employees, obviously, and those employees need to understand a little bit more about who we are and what we do. And so my job is to make sure that we can continue to increase our awareness in the public sector and let them know what we do. And the other little thing I do, too, is to make sure that we maintain relevance with the business community is to do lunch and learns, things of that nature, and always in the community talking to them, chambers of commerce, et cetera, about what we do, why our program's relevant, and what we can do to help them, because what's in it for them is the approach we take.
Now, Executive MBA programs, you're not the only game in town.
Not the only game in town.
So what makes Kennesaw State different than the others?
Well, I'm glad you asked. What makes our program distinctively different, what we call our differentiators, are a couple of things. Number one, we have an integrated curriculum. And so what that means is our curriculum, as I mentioned before, has 5 semesters, and they're all themed. And so what we did was we began with the end in mind, and we said, so what do we want the executive that comes through our program to be able to contribute to their organizations immediately, whether or not they're corporate, entrepreneurial, or not-for-profit? And so we've designed a curriculum that allows them to understand not only the business acumen side, but also how to do that through really getting involved in the interpersonal side of business. Our distinct belief in what CEO Magazine has rated us a Tier 1 program is because we have looked at the marketplace and understand that it is more than just being functionally strong. In other words, you can be the best salesman in the world. You will not be promoted to CEO unless you can understand how to work through people. And so our program focuses on teaming, leadership, and coaching. And so we've got a unique way of doing that. And the way we deliver that program has garnered us a few awards in the marketplace and a lot of the respect from the people who graduated from our program.
Now, are the candidates who are thinking about entering your program or participating in your program, are they the ones that are aspiring to be CEOs, or are they the ones that maybe the company has on a track to become CEO or become a C-level executive?
Yeah, we've got a mixture of all of those, and we've also, the one you didn't mention is the mid-career professionals that are looking to make the next step up. And we've also got folks who are trying to understand exactly what it is they want to be when they grow up. Mm-hmm. And so they're already in a great position. They're strong foundationally, but they don't understand the other aspects or the other levers of business that allow them to be able to get to the next level. So in other words, a salesman is good because that person understands that they've made a personal connection with a customer and that that customer is going to get certain goods delivered. They don't necessarily understand what happens in the back room and the production side of it. And those levers that are important to having all of that product delivered with a smile from the internal customer as well as the external customer.
Some of us salespeople aren't quite as good with the internal customer, I'm just saying.
Well, we do have a few openings left for for our start on September the 4th.
Now, can a person engage in the program at any time? Or like you said, that this is the 3rd and 5, did I miss the train and I got to wait till what? 2 semesters from now to begin?
That is correct. We have a cohort-based lockstep program. And I'm glad you mentioned that because that's one of our other differentiators is that we're a teaming program. And that's different than any other program that I have seen because what we do is we begin on September the 4th for the next cohort, which begins, which will end, in May of 2014. So the class of 2014 begins on September the 4th. And immediately on the first day of arrival, you have been placed onto a team of six or seven people.
Right.
And that domestic intact team does not change. You remain with that team. Throughout the entirety of your experience in this program.
And I don't have to suffer like I did on the playground being the last one picked. I'm already on a team.
Yeah.
I like it already.
Yeah, that's right. We use a blend of art and science to put you together on a team. And so if we think that you're a fit for the program, there's no doubt we'll have you on the right team.
And now I'm on this team and we're going through this together. Are we working together on projects? Is it or am I going to individually do things on my own?
That's actually both. So 60% of what you do in our program is based on your individual acumen, and 40% is based on your ability to team. So team dynamics play a huge part in what we do. And so teaming means more than just I'll do this part if you'll do that part. It's the synergy that happens when the collective comes together. And so you're focused on assignments. And in the real world, when you team, you're focused on getting the deliverables out the door or making the CEO happy or whatever happens there. So We have the individual teams come together in the very beginning, in the first semester, and they develop what's called a constitution. And that constitution has been turned into me over the last few years, and it can run up to maybe 30 or 40 pages. And it gets into this is a graduate, right? Graduate program. So we're talking, so six or seven people are coming together and taking their own individual missions and fusing those into one mission for the team. They'll come away with a team name because they only start with a color. They'll come up with a team song, and they will be making team presentations throughout the program. They'll be looking at the vision, the mission, the operating guidelines, the values, the behaviors that funnel into those values, and the consequences of not performing up to the standards, up to and including dismissal from the program.
Wow. So how does what kind of things would cause someone to get to wash out of the program?
Well, if they don't
not
buy
playing well with others, I think. Well, one, right?
Absolutely. And because the key there is that they're not buying into the central premise. And the central premise is that you must team to be in our program.
Right.
And so if you have a lone ranger, a person that prefers to just say, just tell me what you want me to do and I'll go do it, that person doesn't work well in our program.
And he's probably not going to be a very good CEO anyway.
Probably not.
You don't probably get to say not. That until you are CEO.
Right. Now, what kind of, can you give us an example of maybe one of the projects that a team would complete at one of the junctures of, during the course?
Well, again.
Like, are they practical, real life things, or are these just kind of like theoretical, hypothetical situations?
Well, and I'm glad you asked that question, because there's always a blend of theory and practice in graduate programs.
But not in the real world. In the real world, they tend to be kind of
In the real world, you have to be able to perform, right?
Right.
So that's the area of practice. But you got to understand the theory, because people like me who are intellectually curious, we want to know why.
Uh-huh.
So why does this work this way, and why is that? And so theory, and Dr. Govan can probably speak a lot about theory. A theory is used to be able to get to the practice. And theory, that's the connection between the business community and the academic community.
Right.
Okay? So, yeah, there are a variety of different assignments we have in the program. One is what we call capstone. So as we spoke before, you've got a marketing side, you've got a sales side, you've got a production side of any business, and it doesn't matter really what it is.
Right.
And so we utilize a computer simulation to be able to help people understand what those various levers are and how, when you pull one lever, something else is affected in the symbiotic relationship of a business.
Right.
Most people don't understand that until they come in and actually go through this whole process. So we start people off individually in the CAPSIM. They log on. It's a computer-based program. So they do it individually, and then they come together as a team, develop roles for who will do what. For example, the facilitator of the conversation, the person who's handling the CEO perspective, and who's handling the sales perspective, and then they will make decisions after they come up with a strategy as to who does what and how the company will perform. And so they will then, once they make their decisions, then the rounds occur. So in other words, the decisions are put into the computer then comes back and says, here's the results of your decisions. So then you need to go back and continue to look at that. So that's real world. Mm-hmm. If you look at a quarterly production of any company or annual production of any company, they have to go back and debrief as to what we did last year, or what we did last quarter, and how we're going to do it differently to make sure that we stay on plan, on target, on strategy.
Now, are they all doing that in their homes individually, or are they doing that in a classroom together, sitting side by side?
We start them off in the classroom because there's instruction in addition to, and actually Dr. Keefe is the one who facilitates CAPSIM for us. Mm-hmm. So they get the instructional side of it, the theoretical side of it in classroom instruction, and then they can do it in their leisure within a certain time frame based on the assignment.
So I would think someone in your role, relationships with key people inside employers in the metro Atlanta area, and maybe even a little bit broader, that's got to be really important. You got to get to know these folks and collaborate with the Georgia Powers, the Bell South, the AT&Ts, all these big companies, right? Because there's a lot you can do for them, and they're important to your program. Right?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, what's important for them, if you just look at them being involved with us in the Executive MBA program, is the return on investment they get from an associate, an employee, or leadership coming back into the marketplace, into their workplace, on the Monday after they've had class on Saturday and Sunday, utilizing what we've shown them to do.
They don't have to wait 5 semesters to start getting their return.
Please.
Right?
Yeah, no. They do not have to wait that long. And we encourage them not to wait because of the way we structure our assignments.
And now there is, of course, a financial investment in this. In many cases, a large company that we're talking about will at least help, if not sometimes mm-hmm. completely cover something like that. But anytime there's a financial investment, the next question for most people is return on investment. I'm operating under the impression that there are some compelling data that say, look, if you're the right kind of person and this is the right kind of program for you, you're going to get a healthy return on this investment. What kind of investment are we talking about, and what kind of returns can we expect?
Well, I know Lee earlier said that we're certainly not the only ball game in town, because there's some quality executive MBA programs in the metro Atlanta area.
Yeah, but you don't work with them.
No, I don't. I don't.
They don't have Alvin.
That's right.
I scratched them off a long time ago.
Well, you know, I say that to say this. We don't get them all.
Right.
We don't get all the candidates we'd like to, but again, our program is pretty focused on the fit. So with respect to the cost, we're on the low end of the cost side, but we sincerely feel that we're on the high end of the value chain. So our proposition is such that we have 4 executive MBA programs that are priced higher than we are, and 1 that is priced lower than we are. And real right in the sweet spot. And so our program is $55,500 spread over, quote unquote, 3 years, because you begin in the fall semester, then you have a spring, summer, and fall of the second year, and then the third year you finish up in the spring.
Georgia Power spends that on a shrimp trade.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's a rounding error. It's a rounding error, right?
But no, all kidding aside, even if I have to write the check myself, I'm a professional. I'm working my way up. I'm a mid-career professional like you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Let's take me out of reality. I'm not a radio host. This is a real job. Stone's halfway. He's working his way up. I can make that investment. It's gonna mean a lot for me and my family and my organization for years to come.
Absolutely. The way we look at this is the data we do have is that 80% of the folks who come through our program and finish in our program will either move to a new position that's a better fit or get promoted while they're in the program, which is powerful.
Wow.
Which is powerful. So now that doesn't always mean when you move to another position in your program to get a better fit, that works better for you, that doesn't mean you're always going to get more money.
Right.
It may mean that you'll get more responsibility in lieu of more money. But I'll tell you that we've had some great success over the years, and we have quite a few alumni to speak to it, including me.
Well, I'll tell you what, AT&T, I'm with them 5, 6, 7 years, what have you, and then I've got some recruiter calling me, trying to woo me away, but then I also know that AT&T has a good, strong working relationship with the Executive MBA program,
right?
And perhaps they even are going to help out with a financial investment. That keeps me at that organization for them to be willing to make that investment, right?
Well, that's true. And some companies, most companies we find are actually at the IRS limit, which is $5,250 per year,
mm-hmm.
which is why we structure our program over 3 years to get the max out of it.
Right.
And so with that in mind, you're right. They do get a substantial return on their investment because
well,
they'll have you there through that time period.
You of better
course,
believe
you're still there.
It.
Yeah, yeah. And then from there, of course, if they do have to sign some type of agreement, the candidate does, in order to be able to get some of that funding, then they do so, and then both sides are happy. It's a win-win. And they're also looking, the companies are looking for some type of arrangement with the individual where they can get some, get them on some special projects so you can really let their light shine and get them in front of more opportunities and get them more exposure. And that's what we like.
Lee, I would be willing to stay right here at Business Radio X for five more semesters.
At least.
We'll talk after the program.
Now, Alvin, do you ever work with companies to kind of tailor make or maybe kind of adapt the executive MBA program to a need of a company if they wanted to bring a bunch of people through that?
Yes, a perfect example of that was what we did with the old Bell South, which I am a retiree of. And what we did was we put together what we called a corporate in-house MBA program that had one semester that was focused on telecommunications, and actually a residency that was focused on telecommunications. So we had the business leaders from Bell South coming in, and AT&T as well, coming in and speaking to their students. Ralph De La Vega stopped by, the CEO of Mobility, mm-hmm. and spoke. And we've had Jonathan Dwyer. We've had Glenn Lurie. We've had them all throughout our program, as was mentioned before, because we actually had a cohort that was only AT&T, so AT&T only.
Oh, wow.
And it was delivered actually at their address, actually at Lenox, up until a little over a year ago.
Now, so is that something that you would be open to a conversation with a company that would maybe want to customize a program that just solves problems that they're having internally?
Absolutely.
What's the minimum number of students you would need for a program like that?
Well, I would dare say it's probably around 25 would be the minimum.
Mm-hmm.
And typically what works out better for a classroom or from a pedagogical perspective is somewhere in the 35 to 40 range.
Uh-huh.
Because, again, we're delivering it in-house for them.
Right.
We're taking our faculty and we're walking them over and making sure that they get what they need, get the students what they need. Students are very familiar with the campus, quote-unquote, because they work there.
Right. Right.
They've got a parking arrangement, you know, and so that works out well in their favor. The company gets what they need, and certainly we're delivering a program that is EMBA accredited quality,
right,
and delivers to the student what they actually need to be able to move forward in their careers.
Good stuff.
Yeah, that's fabulous. So let's make sure our listeners know how to get in touch with you if they want to have a conversation about this and learn more.
Absolutely. You can reach us via the web at www.ksuemba.com and by phone number at 770-423-6862. That's our recruiter Julie Miller's number.
Well, terrific job as always, man. It's a lot of fun having you in the studio, and you have that great radio voice too.
Yeah, I tell you, and I've got a face for radio too. We don't need to see that. Thanks for your time.
Yes, sir. Well, we're definitely going to have you back. You going to hang with us while we visit with our last guest?
Absolutely. There's no place else I'd rather be.
All right. Well, Lee, again, from the Startup Lounge, I think, is where we had the pleasure of first meeting this lady. We had a brief interview. We knew immediately that we wanted to have a more substantive conversation. So we now have the CEO with International Services Tech and Media Translators, Ms. Sue Rieger. Welcome to the show.
Well, hi there. Thank you so much.
Well, it's so good to have you in the studio where we can have a real conversation. And, I didn't realize it, but everybody knows everybody here in the studio already,
one
right?
Woman and five men, I believe in
that. That's fantastic. So you do something in the translation arena, which obviously has immediate impact to the first guest anyway. Tell us a little bit about what you're up to.
Well, I'm about to impact you as well.
All right. We'll take it.
Aunt Kennesaw.
Boy, she's got something for everybody.
Everybody wins.
Yes. Basically, really quickly, I speak 10 languages, and I'm a developer of software, linguistic software, in other words, software that has to do with languages. And at International Services, the company you're talking about, I'm involved in two companies. At International Services, does translate for some very high flyers, Fortune 500s. And I'm a principal of Translate Your World. Translate Your World is a combination of two companies that is at International Services and Intellitext with Andrea Bussey.
Yeah.
You know them.
Very
Absolutely. Good. They specialize in mobile engagement and developing things for mobile platforms, desktop platforms. And, of course, I bring in the linguistic elements. So putting it together, I have something for every single one of you in this room. For example, I am speaking now into a microphone. When I speak into that microphone, that sound can go through our software, be split into 20 different feeds in 20 different languages.
Just instantaneously?
Instantaneously.
Can you make me sound like I have a southern accent?
Yes, I have. I can make you talk in Arabic, actually. I can pull out my computer and I can make you talk in Arabic and Chinese, French, Spanish.
How cool is that?
There's only a 2 or 3 second delay.
Right.
And what you say can be turned instantly into subtitles, so they can hear you speaking and they can read what you're saying in subtitles in 40 languages, or they can hear what you say speaking in 20 languages.
Wow, that has all kinds of cool implications.
Wow, that's amazing.
That means that you can become global in less than 2 days.
Now,
absolutely.
Now, how is the translation done? Is that all computerized?
You have your choice. There are 3 or 4 choices, and it all goes how much money you want to pay.
Right.
Which makes normal. I mean, that's normal.
Sure.
It's
right.
normal, yeah.
Sure.
So if you speak clearly, which you don't always, Stone, I noticed that.
Ruh-roh, I'm not a good candidate.
If you pronounce your consonants,
oh my,
then what you say would translate beautifully. Absolutely. Yeah. What everyone said here. Now, these two gentlemen already speak very clearly. So
and they're not
they
professional.
Give elocution. Right. They give elocution.
I'm
lessons,
the professional
I'm sure.
host.
Yes,
yeah,
Stone, this is pretty sad. First you got turned down by Alvin, now you...
Well, the software will have a little trouble with your accent. Now we have to be open here.
Absolutely.
So it goes from the level, which is the lowest and the quickest, which is automated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what everybody wants. That means that people can start teaching. Okay, the universities are starting to use this because they can teach now in English, for example, but it could be in Hindi. Mm. They can teach in one language and have students around the world choosing the language they want to hear. Now, for a university, they have a second option. The second option is to have an interpreter. You could have an interpreter, but this is the first time it's available on the web. In the past, to have an interpreter, you had to have booths and microphones and cables and all kinds of hoopla, and it was a big mess and very expensive. It cost at least $20,000 to have a couple of interpreters for something like the Georgia World Congress Center.
Mm-hmm.
Fly them in, hotels. Well, that's all gone. Now your interpreter is somewhere at a computer sitting on a beach with a headset. Simple as that.
Just coming right behind what you say.
Come right behind what you say and say it in a new language.
Wow.
So now that interpreter then can actually be heard so that the audience can listen to the interpreter.
Mm-hmm.
Or that interpreter can speak and it becomes subtitles, so they still hear you, but they can read the subtitles. Now, the advantage to this is that here we have Clark Atlanta University. I beg your pardon. I'm so sorry. You're next. You're
good.
Next. as they start bringing in students from other countries, that means that they can take the ESL, they can do the prep and the learning. You are talking about your groups. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm sorry. The prep and the learning, they can do it in their own language with the mm-hmm. subtitles, until they pass all of their exams. Listen to what you said about, pardon me, I'm talking to Kenneth.
No, that's okay. We got all the mics open, right?
What you said about the teamwork, my lights went off. You said you choose 6 people, and those people are together for almost a year. Now, try to imagine that you are teaching a master's in international business, and one student is in Dubai, one student is in Beijing, one student is in Moscow, one is in Stockholm. One is in Argentina, and one's in America. What a difference. What a difference. Now, that does change the way you go. You said, well, we all get together in the same room, and we learn something. That goes away. It changes the dynamics of a classroom, and it makes it on the web. And we could do that with you next semester. That quickly. It's ready to go. For you, back to Stone again.
we're going to start putting ing on the end of my words. I know this is coming, right?
What this does is this broadens your base of customers to 6 billion people. There are now a minimum of 4 billion computers out there around the world. The World Trade Center alone has 1,500,000 members. There are 300 World Trade Centers around the world. This gentleman here, what he does is he handles business and politics plus education. So what he is trying to do is he's trying to help the world do better business. What this would mean with this software is that he can bring together the World Trade Centers in Hong Kong, Beijing, Malaysia, and in Syria. You guys don't work there.
Probably not.
Cairo, Dubai, everyone can work together now via the web. This was not possible in the past because there was not enough power, there was not enough strength to the streams right. in the various countries, and now we have that.
So now you mentioned that the lowest price one is the automated translations.
Yes.
Now, are the people that are, reading or watching or listening to the automated translation, are they tolerant of the inevitable missteps and mistakes and not
yes.
and the imperfections of that?
Absolutely. Well, what happens is that there's nothing now. I mean, what are we talking
right.
about?
So you're going from nothing to something.
We're going from nothing to something that's not so bad.
Right.
And it's a huge leap forward. Huge.
But I'll tell you, there's some things like if video and audio is out of sync, just one beat, I can't watch it for more than a few seconds because it's too distracting for me.
But so you're talking lip sync.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
This is not lip sync. This is a different language.
Right. So like if someone's listening to, like you mentioned that this broadcast could be then in Spanish, right? Like automated in Spanish a few second delay, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you said earlier. So now if the person's listening, they don't know, obviously, what we're saying in English. They're only hearing what they're hearing in Spanish,
mm-hmm.
which may not be a perfect translation. Now, what percent of perfection do you think we would be getting?
You'd be getting
80,
based
20?
On what
depends
you're
on whether
saying,
Stone's talking or not, apparently.
if you speak clearly, what the words that you gentlemen use will translate beautifully. So my guess is in the 97% range.
Okay, so they're going to get the idea of what
oh,
we're saying.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
They're going to get the gist, if something's a little goofy.
So, and subtitles tend to be the most popular because they're going to like your laughter. They like your passion. When you laugh, do you know what happens with automated translation software when you
laugh? It says laugh in parentheses?
No. It says all kinds of other things that have nothing to do with what you said. They tend to like the subtitles best because you can see the original or hear the original voice. You can hear the passion. You can hear the humor.
Right, they'll still hear all that in the conversational tone
yes.
that we're all having, not
yes.
this dry. Yeah.
And then
yes.
is the translation, is it, so you're saying subtitles would be
yeah.
in English or would be in...
No, the subtitles are, they choose. There's a pull down. You choose any of up to 40 languages.
How cool is that?
And like the World Wildlife Fund, okay, the World Wildlife Fund out of London next week, they have this huge global meeting. Well, for the first time in history, it's going to be in 20 languages. Hmm. And they're sitting here going, oh my gosh. It's they've been struggling for years. You know, people give a speech in English. Think of the Indians who have so much to say, and how often have we had outstanding Indian speakers who say something on television or in a room, and so many people don't understand them. And
only Sue
English.
Knows what they're talking about.
But see, to have subtitles in English under someone with a heavy
right.
accent, what mm-hmm. that does is it keeps them from being cut off at the neck. It mm-hmm. makes them people communicate.
Well, certainly would lower some barriers, I would think, in the kind of work you're... Surely language is a huge barrier.
Massive.
In all of this kind of work.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, not just India, but definitely also China.
Yes. In
so many different countries across regions, this is a huge value.
We had, there was a Chinese delegation that came over from China about 4 months ago when we were still in beta stage. And I took a little tablet, much like this. I took a little tablet and I put it down and I said, talk to me. And his English was terrible. He says, no, my interpreter's over there. I said, that's okay. I said, talk to me. And so he spoke into my tablet.
In Chinese.
In Chinese. And the subtitles appeared in English.
Oh, how cool.
Oh, yeah.
That?
And this guy was going, he says, look, no, don't. And they all come around the table. So they all come around the table. And we had 5 investors wanting to invest that evening. We were a little nervous to give things away to China, too quickly.
Don't hold it against me,
but you understand.
Doctor can help you.
You have to be a little careful on that.
Sure.
But see, the concept is there. You have this gentleman could teach in China. Oh, my gosh. Do you know how many students could be added to the roster of Kennesaw in once? Boom.
Right.
Even just ESL.
You could charge him a buck a head and get rich. There's a lot of folks on that side.
Hey, it's always consideration, right?
So you're articulating this very well.
Thank you.
Compelling message, and
she's
I'm
speaking very clearly.
And you're speaking very clearly into the mic, just like the sign
says. And that's
says.
Only one of our software too.
But I'm curious about marketing something like this, and maybe it's not a challenge, but I'm curious: how do you get in front of the right people to tell them this story? Are you calling them up on the phone? Are you going out and knocking on doors? How are you meeting your market?
Sure. What is beginning to happen is the large groups. And these gentlemen may actually qualify for exactly what we're doing. We're trying to help the Atlanta Chamber. Now, if we get in front of the Atlanta Chamber is trying to sell Atlanta companies. And they're trying to sell it in Brazil. And what, does Brazil speak English? No, Brazil speaks Brazilian Portuguese. And so the concept is for us, we're going to be giving some of these large groups use of our software in order to help other Atlanta companies.
Like during a big meeting kind of thing?
Or? Oh, like during a big meeting, matchmaking. The ability for companies now to speak across borders so that an Atlanta company can talk for 15 minutes, a Brazilian company can talk for 15 minutes, an Indian company in India, someone in Israel could talk.
So it's just like Chick-fil-A. You're showing up with chicken sandwiches. You taste it. Now you got to have one. It's the same strategy, right?
That's right.
That's great.
But we think it's a revenue generator for education, for business, absolutely. Right. We really want to help the World Trade Center. That kind of power, 1,500,000 members, and they're all global businesses. All of them. And these are places for your students can start global businesses. You know, entrepreneurs. It's just one of those things that it's good for everyone.
Right.
So how can we help? What do you need most right now? Are you looking for funding? Are you looking for clients? Are you looking for people to help you refine this product further? How can we help?
Sure. It's working extremely well now. So we're now at the launch stage. We're moving forward and we're starting to sell. And are we taking investors? Yes. We actually have some people standing in line, which is a wonderful change.
Wow, that's a nice
It's a wonderful change from the last few years, yes. Right. But yeah, that's exactly what we need. We need investors, we need marketing, and we need good clients, of which the people in this room would actually be outstanding
be good case
examples.
Studies, I would think. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that they would profit as well as we would.
Oh,
see,
yeah.
They would increase their revenue just for the information that's being passed out and the marketing value. We are speaking around the world. Please come hear us. That has a value. It has a monetary value. You could be turned into an internet television channel. In 2 weeks, we could turn you into an internet television channel. Behind you, instead of those tan walls, you've got a green screen. And when you give an interview, you're interviewing somebody in Russia, you're interviewing this gentleman right here in the studio, and you're interviewing somebody else in Australia or South America.
You speak at least one more language.
I speak 10.
Sales.
I speak 10 languages.
You speak 11 languages because every time she says we can do X or Y, she says like by tomorrow or like within a week.
No, but it's true.
No,
I could have you global in 2 days, I mean, as a radio. And I talked to Jim Beach this morning.
Oh, you did?
And
I'm
he
sorry.
Said, oh, no. He said, wow. So, I mean, he's on board.
Yeah, that's great. Jim's coming in a little while. He's hosting our new restaurant show.
Yes.
Well, I hate to wrap this up, but it is about time to do that. But before we do, let's make sure our listeners know how to get in touch with you in case they want to have a conversation about this thing.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. So what's the best way for them to reach out? Website, phone number?
Yes, website. We have two websites. Try www.internationalservices.com or www.translateyourworld.com.
Good stuff. All right. Well, this is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton and our guest today. We will see you all next time on the Atlanta Business Radio Show.